Hey guys, we are on a new series called Loving Books. If you don't love books, you need to love books. They're so incredible. And I'm interviewing some of my friends that have written books and have books coming out. I'm so excited. Today, I'm with Carrie Sheffield. And all this month, we're celebrating my release of my book, Jesus and Politics, One Woman's Walk with God in a Mudslinging Profession. It's out now. Wherever you get your books, get it now. It's so exciting. But I want to tell you a little bit about Carrie before she comes on with us. Carrie Sheffield is a columnist and broadcaster in Washington, D.C. She's the author of a new book that comes out in March called Motorhome Prophecies, A Journey of Healing and Forgiveness. You're going to love this book, and we're going to dive into it in this podcast. Carrie is a senior policy analyst at Independent Women's Forum. She earned a master's in public policy from Harvard University, concentrating on business policy. She earned her bachelor's in honors in communication at Brigham Young University. And man, this woman has gone everywhere. She spent time at Goldman Sachs. She has traveled the world. And she's such an incredible voice in our nation in journalism. And you're going to hear her incredible story today on Conversations with Christians Engaged. Welcome to the Conversations with Christians Engaged podcast. I'm your host, Bunny Pounds, the president of Christians Engaged. This ministry exists to awaken, motivate, educate, and empower ordinary believers in Jesus Christ to do three things: to pray for our elected officials and our nation regularly, to vote in every election to impact our culture, and to engage in some form of civic education or involvement for the well-being of our nation.
I'm so thankful, Bunny, for what you do. A lot of people talk the talk, but you really walk the walk.
There's nobody else I want to talk to about Jesus with than you.
And I will stand and lock arms with this woman of God, Bunny Pounds, any day of the week.
Bunny, you are a new hero of mine.
And I'm 100% behind something that Bunny Pounds is doing. Encourage her, pray for her, and be involved. Be part of Christians actively engaged.
America is worth it. Now is the time. America needs your involvement. Please take our pledge to pray, vote, and engage. Join with a movement of other Christians that are doing these three simple things that can really impact this nation. Join us. Guys, I'm here with Carrie Sheffield. I am so excited. And this series is about loving books. And I am so excited, Carrie, to talk to you about your book and everything that you're doing as a journalist. It's great to have you here, friend.
Thanks for having me, Bunny. And thanks for everything you do. You are a powerhouse.
Well, I've just detailed to everybody at the beginning of this video your entire career. Not really. Your bio is so long, I'm not reading all of that. But I just am so thankful for Christians in the place of journalism. It is just such a hard career field. And we're constantly encouraging Christians to step into media, politics, education, you know, these places of influence. And you've done that. And you have an incredible story. I want to get into your book and just everything that's about to happen in your life is going to just, it's just going to be amazing, girl. But talk to us a little bit about, you're a new believer just in the last few years, and you've had some incredible journalists even in your life, like Billy Hollowell and others, just encourage you in your new faith journey. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So yes, I was baptized on December 3rd, 2017. So a little over 6 years now. So I am in first grade. I would joke about how I was previously a toddler. But yeah, I am not a stranger, though, to religion because I had been raised in the Mormon faith. And in Mormonism, high school students, it's a different way to think about seminary. But I actually went to 4 years of Mormon seminary while I was in high school. And so I'm very familiar, although I spent about 12 years agnostic in between being Mormon and getting baptized Protestant Christian. So it's been a journey.
It's been a journey. And my book just came out. Yay! We've been talking about our books and just the process of writing and doing audiobooks and everything that we've been doing. It's just been a blessing to just even talk to you about the process because it's just It's people don't understand it until they go through it. But anyway, my book's out. It came out February 6th, so people can get it. Jesus in Politics, One Woman's Walk with God in a Mudslinging Profession. But yours is coming out March 12th, right? March 12th?
Yes, it is. And I've got my copy here, my advanced copy. Woo! I keep its title. It's Motorhome Prophecies, A Journey of Healing and Forgiveness. So it's been fun to just walk through that journey with you on the author route. As we both talked about, even just physically, it can be draining, but, ultimately the purpose obviously is to point people to God. So, whatever good can come from it, that's my prayer.
Well, and it's really different. I mean, I'm a writer, as you know, I write a column, most weeks for the stream and then other publications, but it's one thing to write other people's stories. It's another thing to write your own story. And I found it to be an extremely vulnerable process. And I don't have near the stories that you have. Give everybody a little bit of a taste. I mean, you were in a pretty much Mormon cult with your father and grew up, just give them the taste of what your childhood was like. And it's really a testimony of God's grace over your life.
Yeah. So, to be clear, I'm always very clear when I talk about the word cult, because I don't believe the LDS Church is a cult, but I do believe what my father did was a cult. He, in fact, was excommunicated from the LDS Church. He was very extreme. And the book is called Motorhome Prophecies, because he made us not this motorhome, but, you know, various motorhomes over the years. He made us live in the motorhome with my 7 biological siblings and the parents. So it was 10 people in a motorhome, which alone is a feat of physics. But we also, we had a transitory life. We did live in houses sometimes. So we had houses. We also had lived in sheds. We also lived in tents. And of course, the motorhome. My mother actually gave birth when the family was living in a tent in Greenbelt Park, outside the Beltway in Maryland. It just, to me, that seemed medieval to give birth in a tent. But, you know, she is just an incredible woman, very, very strong. But unfortunately, in my view, she was also abused psychologically and spiritually by my dad. But the thing is, the reason why my dad, I believe, and I try to be as compassionate as I can to him in the book as well, I believe part of why he became radicalized is and just mentally ill is because he was sexually abused by a babysitter. Mm-hmm. And this babysitter was part of, as I understand it, his Mormon congregation or someone they met through it. And so it was a figure that the family trusted. And, you know, children who undergo sexual assault are far more likely to commit suicide. And my dad did say when he grew older that he felt suicidal because of what had happened to him as a child. And unfortunately, back in those times, even more than today, there was no, you know, treatment for it. There was, in terms of like, they didn't get him to any counseling, you know, secular or spiritual. I think today's secular counseling world can be actually harmful in some ways if it's not done right. But to get a good, you know, therapy with a good spiritual Christian counselor is very helpful. I know for me, it's been tremendous, but the idea of this just didn't exist back then for him. He was born in 1938 and the trauma of that compounded with some other things, including his best friend dying very suddenly when he was junior high. So compound that incredible trauma, and then incredible gifting. So he is an incredible musician. So if anyone listening or viewing, if you know about a guy named Andre Segovia, so Andre Segovia was probably the world's greatest known classical guitarist. So if you like the genre of classical guitar, you know the name Andre Segovia, Andre Segovia, as they say in Spanish. But he was from Spain and he was knighted by the King of Spain. He won 10 honorary doctorates. He has an asteroid named after him and he won a lifetime Grammy Achievement Award. And so he hand selected my father to be one of his proteges for musical performance and guitar performance, and also for musical composition for guitar. And so you take that level of gifting. And then my father also won a nationwide search for the up and coming young musical composer. And he won. And he tells the story of how he says they opened the envelope and they were like, where the hell is Provo, Utah? And he had gotten gifting from his mother. My grandma, she had won a nationwide or a worldwide within the LDS church. So you're talking about millions of people, a competition for writing like a play or musical. So he got that gifting from his mother. And so you combine that gifting with his interpretation of Mormon theology and then the childhood trauma, and boom, you get a man who passes more trauma on to his children and to his wife. And that's, you know, hurt people. And so he basically said on a daily basis, we were indoctrinated that we were evil and that he was righteous and he was called by God to save America and that he would be president someday. And just being transitory all the time was God's will. And so he would take his guitar and play it on street corners and attract people to come and listen. And then he would pass out Mormon brochures and try to convert them. So I was, as they say in Christianity, a PK in that respect, a pastor's kid, but Mormons don't use the word pastor, but he was sort of a homespun, I guess, a prophet's kid. I was a prophet's kid, a PK. You know, I think what's sad about all of it is that he loves America. He truly does. And I think he has a deep love for people. I just think that he was willing to sacrifice the mental health. You know, eventually I had two of my brothers develop schizophrenia. And one of them tried to rape me and the other one accused me of trying to seduce him to have sex with me. And my dad said, well, you dress like a slut, you provoked him and all these horrible things. And it got to the point where I just said, you know, I want to go away to college. And he said, well, if you do that, and he raised his hand to the square, he said, I prophesy in the name of Jesus, if you leave, you'll be raped and murdered. And so it was very much one of those do or die moments. He tried to rape me. He's saying I'm getting raped, whatever I do. So I ended up just leaving. I chose freedom. And it was liberating and exhilarating, but also very sad and depressing because I became disowned. My dad said my blood changed. I was no longer his daughter. I was not allowed home all through college and, you know, for summer breaks or Christmas breaks or anything like that. And it just became this constant battle within myself to prove him wrong, to say, no, I am going to achieve. And I just did achieve, and I achieved a lot. And I achieved a lot without his support, and in fact, with his sabotage in many ways.
Well, I've seen that as a kind of a pattern, too, is that when you grow up without that affirmation and identity, right, from the most important person that you need it from, right, which is your father, then, man, you're looking for it in other places. And thankfully, you found it ultimately in Jesus. And I think that's why this story is so important, Carrie, for people to understand that, I mean, yes, praise the Lord that you have had an incredible career, graduated from Harvard, all the incredible accolades that you have. But I just, the few times we've met, just seen such a depth of in your heart of who you are. And I believe that that is really the faith that God's brought you into. And it's exciting to watch. So I pre-ordered this book. I cannot wait to consume it. But give us a little bit feel again of kind of what was it like when you went away to Harvard? Here you are. You don't really have any family that you're in contact with very much, right? I mean, you're like alone. How did you deal with that?
Yeah. So Harvard was for my master's. So I got a full tuition journalism scholarship to go to Harvard for my master's. So my undergrad is from BYU, and BYU was, for the first time in my life, a place where I felt like I belonged, because I had spent 18 years of my life. I actually transferred there my sophomore year. It's a long story where I spent the freshman year in Missouri, but 19, feeling like I belong for the first time. And it's a beautiful campus. It's like 30,000 students. It's enormous. And I was surrounded by all these Mormon kids who thought and believed like I did. And that was part of why I left home, was because the Mormon theology is that there's only one prophet and he lives in Salt Lake City and his name's not Ralph Sheffield. So that really was the collision course of, is my father a prophet or not? Because he said that he followed the Holy Ghost more than the official prophet in Salt Lake City. And so I chose the official route. And so that's why I went to BYU partially. And I wanted to find a Mormon husband. And so studying at BYU was ultimately where I ended up losing my faith in the LDS Church. And it's a long story of kind of what started it, but eventually, the more I studied the origins and the claims of Mormonism, the more I just felt like, I can't do this. I can't do this. And it was heartrending for me. And it was actually the first time that I had ever felt suicidal because I wanted it to be true so badly. And I told God, I said, I'd rather die than this not be true. I wanted to be with God. And I thought that being with God meant to be LDS. And so I wrestled, and then eventually decided to leave the LDS Church. I basically coasted my senior year and didn't believe, graduated, moved to Washington, but struggled a lot with PTSD, depression, and just some career stumbles, and tried all these different idols to replace, because at that point I had left organized religion because I thought it was destructive. I thought it was a sociological construct. Partially because immediately after leaving BYU, I started to go to some Christian churches. I went to a Catholic church because I was dating a Catholic guy, but then he dumped me to get back with his Catholic ex. Then I started dating, I went to this evangelical, non-denominational church in the DC area, and unfortunately had a terrible experience, in my early 20s. And, you know, one of the guys in the group tried to force me to have sex with him after I was tipsy. And then I was in a women's Bible study, and they actually kicked a woman out whose mother was dying of cancer because this woman had gotten in an argument with the Bible study group leader. And I was horrified and disgusted that they actually voted her out. I voted to keep her in, but myself and a couple others, we were overruled by the majority of the group. And she'd been a member of this group for years. It was very important for her. And then to be exiled from it right around the time her mother was dying of cancer, I was horrified. And then shortly after that, her mother died of cancer. And so I just, at that point, I said, you know, I'm done. In good conscience, I thought I was done with religion. And I think a big part of my problem was that I was looking for God in the wrong place. I was looking for God in other people. And in an ideal scenario, that is what a Christian is that you find Christ. That is what Jesus said, by this shall men know you are my disciples, by the love you show each other. Well, all I just experienced in this walk, I mean, not all, there were some positive people, but on balance to me, I felt like religion was an experience of hate. And so when I see what's happening in our country now with the secularization, at the time when I was agnostic, so like I said, I was agnostic for almost 12 years, I praised that. I thought secularizing the country was a good thing because I thought that religion was toxic and that it was a tool to control and poison people. So when I was at Harvard, I tried to avoid Christians as much as possible, tried to avoid dating them if they ever wanted to date me, not interested. And I tell people it was kind of like with a cell phone, you know, a cell phone, there's a 1.0, 2.0, you get the bug out of the system. I thought God was a bug. And I thought that with enough good policy and enough good economics and enough capitalism that we could become so wealthy and healthy and successful that we would work that God bug out. So that's where I was. And I can go more to the conversion, but that's how I spent my agnostic years.
Well, I think it's an amazing story that everybody needs to read. Motorhome Prophecies. Pre-order it right now. I've already got it pre-ordered. So order my book, Jesus and Politics, and order Carrie Sheffield's book, Motorhome Prophecies. Just go ahead and do it on Amazon right now. Talk to us, Carrie. We're talking about loving books this month. And as new authors, and you've got an amazing publisher, by the way, too. But why is it so important for pre-orders for, it's kind of like music artists. Why is pre-orders important when we always push pre-orders? Why is that important in this weird world of publishing?
Yes. Well, and I was very happy to, around the same time, pre-order your book too, because they are very vitally important. So because it has to do with the bestseller list. You know, it's, you know, I think more art than science, how they calculate it. But and I think what I've learned too, it's actually the hardcover one that matters the most. So I've had a lot of people ask me about the audiobook or the Kindle. I'm like, when it comes to it, it still needs to catch up. And unfortunately, the bestseller metrics are in the, and also the book scan metrics. So the book scan is the metric for whether or not basically you are worthy for a second book based on your sales. And book scan is only right now based on hardcovers, not on the others. So it is what it is. But the, you know, Amazon reviews, any, you know, Goodreads, wherever you get your book or read your book, positive reviews are definitely welcome, you know. And it's interesting because to me, you know, was thinking about like Paul and like the early Christians, like they didn't have to worry about any of this stuff. I don't enjoy this part of what I'm, this isn't the reason that I did what I did to write the book. You know, I eventually went to work at Goldman Sachs and Moody's Investor Service, you know, and if I had stayed at Goldman Sachs, I could have been a lot more wealthy than I am today. But I chose to give up Wall Street. It was 10 years ago on November 15th of last year of 2023. So 10 years. And I was reflecting on what did I do in those 10 years since leaving Wall Street. And again, I'm a lot less poor than, or a lot less wealthy than I would have been if I had stayed, personally. But the things that I was able to do, you know, I don't know if I would have become a Christian because I would have probably been living a much more comfortable life, instead of, as they say, disrupting myself. It's been a very disruptive 10 years. I never thought I would become a Christian. Never, never. And when Hachette, which is my publisher that you mentioned, when they made a book announcement that the book was coming out, Christianity Today reached out to my agent and said, hey, can we run an excerpt of the book for when did she convert and why? And just walk us through that conversion story. And so I was happy to give them an excerpt from the, you know, with Hachette's permission to run with Christianity Today. And it's centered on this idea. And I think your book is so important, Bunny, because I think you are a woman who is, you know, really trying to seek God in what you do. And there's a good phrase that I heard from Ronald Reagan that he had given to a group of Christian evangelical broadcasters. And he said, I'm pretty wary when people claim that God is on their side. I think we should be spending more time asking, am I on God's side? And I think that humility is something that certainly in my family, we were not. I mean, it was like, your dad's the prophet. He's going to be president. Of course he's right, you know? Versus, Lord, help me to surrender my will. Help me to surrender my ego. Help me to surrender my work, my purpose, my book, everything. Yeah. You know, and that process of surrender is so difficult, and it's a process that, you know, will never be finished on this side of heaven. And but for me, the conversion happened because I realized what I had done in hindsight. There's a really great book by Tim Keller called Counterfeit Gods. And basically each chapter is a counterfeit God that we worship instead of God. So whether that is money, power, sex for men and like family, kids for women, and just what good things, you know, and he makes the point that it's easy for us to mock, you know, people for worshiping Baal or a golden calf, like that's silly, right? Okay, well, we do the same thing. It just looks a little bit different. It might be a fancy car or a house that you can't afford. And anything that you put ahead of that peace and that presence with God, that's an idol. And so for me, I think the intensity of experience of Mormonism and specifically my dad's interpretation of it, you know, in researching for the book, what cults do to your brain, it's actually the same drug patterns or brain patterns as a drug user or an alcohol addict or a sex addict. It actually the chemical patterns. And so I was looking for that level of intensity in other things, be it intense dating relationships, intense work relationships. And it was always the next thing, but they kept failing me, you know, bad relationships, bad work environments. And so finally, I thought I had settled on a God that wouldn't fail me. And that was the God of politics. And at the time, you know, I had left Wall Street. At Wall Street, I was managing, you know, the lead analyst on a $5.5 billion credit portfolio at Moody's Investor Service as a bond analyst. So I like to joke I'm a retired bond girl. But, you know, I left that to get into the conservative fight, but I was still agnostic. So I would describe myself at the time as a secular conservative. And I thought that politics was basically my purpose in life. And that was my religion. My religion was politics, which is what we see. It's more common on the secular left to have that be their religion. But for me as a secular conservative, that was my religion. And I, you know, I went to the Harvard Kennedy School, which is named after JFK. And I think subconsciously, I'd almost put him as a messiah type figure. He was someone to be worshipped as someone who had given his life for his people. And he had given that ultimate price on behalf of his people, similar to Martin Luther King Jr., similar to Abraham Lincoln, that it was something that they had willingly sacrificed. And I recently learned that Abraham Lincoln, I believe it, he passed away on Good Friday. It's very symbolic. But then what stopped me in my tracks was that Donald Trump happened. And at the time, I was a very hardened Never Trumper. And I could not compute my ideal religion with this man. I said, you know, he has said horrible things about women. He donated to Hillary Clinton, who's a Democrat. I had been living in Manhattan and I'm like, he's a Manhattan Democrat. Like, he's not a conservative. I can't do this. I can't worship this. And so it actually became this existential moment for me of what's my purpose in life? What am I worshiping? And I realized I needed to come back to the drawing board to find a different purpose in life. So, you know, and what's interesting is that eventually, you know, with time, I started to go to Tim Keller's church in New York, you know, Redeemer, and was mentored by some other wonderful spiritual mentors like the head of the Episcopal Church, who I disagree with politically, but Michael Curry, who's the presiding bishop of the entire global Episcopal Church, his canon, his deputy, is one of my baptismal sponsors. But all that to say is that once I was in the walk and found that, wow, and also, I say it was two forces that brought me to baptism, Donald Trump and science. And the science piece of it was during that walk, I also started to research metaphysics. And it was a long story of how that happened. But in short, I realized that, wow, it actually takes more faith to be an atheist than someone who believes in a creator in terms of statistically. The statistical probabilities of the earth being the way it is at this perfect access, temperature, pressure, for us to have the sentience that we do, the complexities of our brains, for it all just to be so random, takes more faith on a statistical basis. And then also to learn more about the metaphysics of creation, the metaphysics at a subatomic level. I, you know, researched writing from a PhD physicist from MIT, and then also there's a really great ministry called Science Plus God by Michael Gillen. He's got three PhDs from Cornell. He came into Cornell as an atheist and left as a Christian. And, you know, he's was a Harvard physics professor. And just, again, the science of faith, how they're perfectly aligned. And that's one thing I don't like in the media when they say that Christians are anti-science. It's like, first of all, Christians created the scientific process. And then secondly, science reveals the mind of God. We don't have a monopoly on the mind of God. Nobody does. Christians don't and non-Christians don't. But it is not something to be afraid of. And it just glorifies God, in my opinion. So those two forces are really what brought me to baptism, Donald Trump and science. And so then, as I like to say, the divine order, I learned this in my confirmation class, the divine order is God, people, things. And the way I had been living my life as an agnostic was people, things, and then I don't really care about God. I was indifferent. And once I had the proper order, or the, you know, as they say in the Bible, that the world was turned upside down, yes, by the disciples, I was actually okay with Donald Trump. I could handle it because it wasn't my religion. He wasn't my Messiah. He was actually just a politician, and I liked, you know, his outcomes. I didn't agree with all his tweets. I didn't agree with everything he said or did, but I saw the hard evidence. I mean, just look at the world on fire with, you know, between the heartbreaking withdrawal of Afghanistan and then the Middle East and even the Russia invasion. Mark my words, that Russian invasion would not have happened under Trump's watch. And then just looking at the economy and inflation. So it was an easy choice for me in 2020 to vote for Trump. And like I said, because I had the right order of things.
I think that's what we're trying to do with these books, Carrie. And I just appreciate your faithfulness to lay down your life in a way of writing it and being vulnerable about your story, because ultimately that's what we're trying to do. And that's what definitely what my book is about, is how do we walk with Jesus in politics? How do we not worship the God of politics? But yet we have to get engaged as Christians. And so that you pretty much told the whole story of why we have Christians engaged right here. Because Jesus is not on the ballot. We have to make hard decisions. We don't endorse specific candidates or political parties, but we're trying to get Christians to make those hard decisions, pray, vote, and engage regularly, and get involved on every level. So everybody go out and get Carrie Sheffield's book. Check out Carrie's website, carriesheffield.com. Subscribe to her blog and her articles. Your writing's awesome, girl. And get her book, Motorhome Prophecies. Pre-order it today. And I can't say enough, thank you so much, Carrie, for being with us today.
Thank you, Bunny. And God bless you, and God bless your book, and God bless all you're doing.
Bless you. Thank you so much for joining us for this incredible podcast. What a time we've had. We love you so much. We love being in your life. Have you subscribed? Have you shared this with your family and friends? Please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, Rumble, wherever you get your audio or video pods. We need your help. This mission is undergirded by individuals just like you that support this ministry monthly, annually, and whenever you think about us, to be able to reach over 1 million Christians in the next 2 years. That's our goal. We want to empower 1 million Christians around America to pray, vote, and engage regularly. Will you help us? We're here to do that, and we need your help. I want to say thank you to our partners at The Stream. What an incredible online publication put out by James Robison and Life Outreach International. As we come together across denominational lines as believers to discern what God's saying about the news of the day and to hear from different viewpoints, check out The Stream, make it your homepage, and get on their email list. This product is amazing. Also, our partners at Edify App, put out by Christian Post. This podcast app is a convergence of Bible teachers around America. We're excited to be a part of Edify App. Check out all their other podcasts. Thank you so much again for caring about this nation. We're here to help you pray, vote, and engage. We'll see you next week.